Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2015, number 6. It's game week, and welcome to the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. Huskers getting ready to start the season off at home against BYU. Mormons play football on Saturday. They just won't play on Sunday, and it's going to be one hell of a game to kick off the season.
That was a horrible joke, Greg.
It was a horrible joke, but
especially since I'm Mormon.
If you can't make fun of Mormons, who can't you make fun of? I'm Catholic. I get made fun of all the time.
I was going to say, I'm thinking of have you seen The Book of Mormon?
The Book of Mormon might be one of the best Broadway plays I've ever seen.
It was...
Hello.
That was funny.
My name is Elder Price. Yes, if you have not seen The Book of Mormon off-Broadway or on-Broadway, see it when it comes back to Omaha or if it ever comes to Lincoln, because it is...
It's pretty funny.
It's by the creators of South Park, and if you don't laugh your ass off during Book of Mormon, you have no sense of humor whatsoever. None whatsoever.
I would have to agree with that.
Of course, the Husker Doc Talk Podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy, and Dave Remington is at Burning Man right now as we speak, enjoying the freak show that is Burning Man, but he's gearing up for what will be yet another great Remington Trophy presentation at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln on January 16th. You can get your tickets and buy them online at remingtontrophy.com. As the season goes along, we'll take a closer look at the finalists that will be nominated for the Remington Trophy, and even talk to Dave as the season goes along as well. But of course, support the Remington Trophy. Dave still supports Nebraska in a big, big way, and don't miss out. Again, January 16th at the Rococo Theater. So this week has been a weird week, because we should be focusing on Brigham Young. We should be focusing on the game, everything that's brand new. But it started off with former Channel 7 sports director John Schutz being named the public address announcer at Memorial Stadium on Monday. Then on Tuesday, Rob, they took the job away from him because he said that Harvey Perlman on Facebook was a disgrace. So what I learned right there is that I could never, ever, ever work for the University of Nebraska in any capacity whatsoever.
You have no chance of ever getting a job there, even if you weren't a Hawkeye.
You know, here's the deal. John Schutz is one of the most straight-laced, great guys
I've
ever
met. John is a great guy.
He has never had a drop of alcohol in his life.
He has handled this with an obscene amount of grace.
And when he took that phone call and they fired him, and they heard how he handled it, the university should said, you know what, you're just too nice. We can't take this job away from you. And let's be honest, Rob, that what pisses me off about this is nobody would have ever known. Nobody would have ever known.
Well, and here's the thing. Even if they did, he's in the media. What does the media do in this day and age?
He's not in the media anymore. He's a financial planner for Edward Jones.
But he's a guy with a media background.
You're right. You're exactly right.
He still has a media following. And for that reason, if you're in that position, you're going to be putting yourself out there in the media to a degree. And for that reason, you got to be understanding that guys in the media have opinions. Guys are going to express those opinions. And if you approach anybody in the media, odds are they're going to have an opinion on the biggest program in the state and how they've dealt with situations in the past. And John had an opinion on how they dealt with things in the past.
And it really didn't have to do with the firing of Bo Pelini. Well, it did, but it also goes back to when you and I were doing Sound Off together on Channel 3, and Harvey Perlman's absolute screw-ups that led from extending Steve Peterson's contract to extending Bill Callahan's contract to then having to fire both of those guys, and Harvey was never held responsible. Harvey is a disgrace to when it comes to making key decisions in the athletic department. And I know what... You're right. John has handled this, but I would say the majority of Nebraskans agreed with the posting that John Schutz made and would say that Harvey Perlman was a disgrace.
I think a lot of people would agree with that. It's Minsparak. Now, you could look at somebody like Gordon Gee, and I mean...
Yeah, Gordon Gee.
There's somebody who's probably way worse.
I mean, we've heard stories that be careful of what you post on social media because you can come back to haunt you.
And that did happen. Now, here's the other thing, too, in regards to how this has played out, is one, you got to be careful with this stuff because it can come back to haunt you. Now, I have trouble blaming John for putting the post out there. At the same time, if it was a situation where you would ever consider A, going back into the media, or B, having some athletic affiliation with the university, you got to be diplomatic in what you say. And now, on the flip side, before you go and hire a guy, it's common knowledge in this day and age, you go through every iota of their social media background. You go through their Twitter account. You look at Facebook. You look at Instagram. Apparently, Snapfish disappears. I'm still trying to wrap
Snapfish
my head around
Snapfish or Snapchat?
This.
I think it's Snapchat.
What did I say? Snapfish? Said, I don't know. I'm thinking, so, I got catfish and I got
You've been
Snapchat.
Catfished? Are girls trolling for you online? Do you get the chicks from Ghana looking for Rob Zadiska?
I hope not.
I get them all the time. Hello, darling. Who the hell are you? I'm from Ghana. No, you're not.
Actually, usually I get the emails where it's like, hello, dear most incredible sir. I have the most amazing, wonderful offer proposed to you. It's always an email like that, which you just send to delete right away.
But I think we've established that if we have to watch what we say on social media, that I am now unemployable whatsoever by the University of Nebraska.
I think a lot of people are.
Hell, you would probably be.
Well,
by these podcasts.
Well, and some of the tweets I've put out there, I'm sure.
But something tells me you don't need the job.
Got a day job, not very involved in athletics. Here's the thing, though, too. I mean, you even hear about college coaches going back and looking at kids that they're recruiting or potentially recruiting. College coaches are looking at this stuff. They're going back. It's in my mind, this should at this point be common knowledge for somebody going through a hire, especially one that's even a little bit high profile. And I would consider this at least a little bit high profile.
Especially after why Patrick Combs was fired. Now, he has not been found guilty, but it's alleged that he, you know, stole a bunch of money from some old ladies. So you had it.
Exactly. I mean, you've got things in terms of how the guy lost his job. Yeah. You're bringing a new guy in. Look into the background here. Go through those accounts. And I'm not saying that John should have been fired over this. In my mind, it's one of those you just kind of brush it off and just do you know what? He's a good guy and he's good at what he does.
Harvey Pearlman.
And I think he'd be good at the job.
So do I.
But I understand the protocol. Now, here's the thing, too. You've got university politics. Now, there's a quote that gets attributed to Henry Kissinger. I think, truthfully, if you dig into the research behind it, it dates prior to that. But supposedly, Henry Kissinger said something along the lines of the politics of academics, higher academics, are particularly vicious precisely because the stakes are particularly small. And so there are some huge politics involved in academics. You are dealing with very large egos in this setting, and it's across the board. I'm talking everywhere from stadium employees up to higher administration. You're dealing with a lot of egos at a major university. Professors, PhD students, everybody's got an ego within the world of academics. And it revolves oftentimes around occasionally small and petty stakes, and it did in this case.
So, you know, John Schutz calls Harvey Pearlman a disgrace, but yet Harvey Pearlman invites Tommy Lee on campus to do a reality TV show, despite the fact that Tommy has one of the most famous sex tapes around. So, and by the way,
what's wrong with that?
He's huge. He's huge. I'm a little jealous of that. But anyway,
well, like most other men, I was looking at Pamela, not Tommy.
It was hard not to notice, but you know, this is what happens. John, just let you know, we're on your side, and trust me, we wish you were calling the game. But Lane Grindle will do a fine job. We just don't think it was fair what happened to you. Hey, you know, usually we start off the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy with some fresh beer from the Benson Brewery. No beer tonight, but I do want to tell you about a great experience I had on Tuesday night, because it's Taco Tuesday at the Benson Brewery, which is located in the heart of Benson.
Thanks for calling me.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but here's the deal, Rob. You can get three tacos and a beer for $10. Can you imagine that? Three tacos, and they're good size. I got a fish, I got a chicken, I got a steak, and I got a beer for $10. My wife got the same thing.
You remember what beer you had?
I had the coffee stout.
You like that coffee
stout. I love it. I absolutely love it. Of course, the Benson Brewery, located at 6059 Maple Street. You want to get there on Tuesdays. You want to get there every single day, but Tuesday especially. Trust me when I tell you, you'll enjoy Taco Tuesday. Get three. The tacos are big, they're cheap, and the beer is flowing. You will not be disappointed. It's the Benson Brewery at 6059 Maple Street in the heart of Omaha, and really the heart of Benson, and a proud supporter of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So, John Schutz was a distraction on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, Mike Riley becomes a distraction when a release comes out early on Wednesday morning saying that he was he's basically being sued and he can't talk about it because he's got to let the legal profession take its course. As we find out, we're going back to 1999. A girl alleges she was raped, sexually assaulted at Oregon State. And she's suing the university and Mike Riley because she claims he fostered an atmosphere of sexual aggression. 1999. Now, listen.
Well, it's a civil lawsuit.
It is.
So criminal statute of limitations ran out a long time ago.
I mean, that's like saying Tom Osborne had a culture of violence around his program, which you and I both know was not the truth. You cannot police people 24 hours a day.
I think very few coaches do. Even coaches that I think have a bit of a bad reputation for running a renegade program, even those guys are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to run a program. They're trying to run a business. They're trying to run a team. And again, you can't police everybody. There is a higher rate of sexual assault and domestic violence outside of athletics than there is within athletics. Now, within athletics is where you get all the media coverage. And so you create these situations where I think in a situation like this, now obviously we don't know all the facts, a ton of facts. I mean, very little detail has come out about this. That being said, oftentimes, whether or not it happened, you've got somebody who's looking for either A, justice, or B, money, pun unintended on your name there, and both are potentially legitimate claims. But when you get in a situation like this where you have a program where you have one single person, I guarantee you the person who allegedly committed the sexual assault at the time was probably a 17 to 22-year-old kid who at that time had no money to their name and to this day probably still does not have any money.
So the best people to go after is Oregon State and Mike Riley.
You throw a bunch at the wall, you see what sticks, and you hope something does.
And
that's how you go out to try and whet out the justice.
And listen, I have three daughters. You have two daughters. Sexual assault and rape is nothing to joke about. It's to be taken seriously. My only question is the timing and why wait so long. We're talking a long time ago. We're talking, what, 15 years ago? 16 years ago?
16 years.
16 years ago. That's a long time to wait. I also question the timing of the game week. Why did you wait before game week? Another reason I question the timing is because the University of Oregon, Dana Altman, former Creighton coach, was being sued for something very similar. Charges against him were dropped, but yet the University of Oregon settled a similar suit for $800,000. And did that play into the timing of, oh, wow, this girl just settled for $800,000. Maybe I'll do the same. I'm not playing the blame game here. I just think how long you wait and the timing of this to come out is a bit shocking to me because it really grabs more headlines because it's game week.
It does. I'm trying to think of a good way to be diplomatic.
It's hard to talk about this.
It is because I do. I'm married and I've got two daughters. It's a difficult subject when it comes up in this setting where you're talking a decade and a half later that somebody comes after him. That raises the questions. If this was a situation where the person in question filed this lawsuit last fall, And it took this long to kind of run its way through the legal system to the point that it finally became public. I got to be honest, I wouldn't have a problem with that. That makes complete and total sense to me. A decade and a half later, that's where you sit back. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't, regardless of the reason for it, if this was a automobile accident and somebody had a broken leg because of it, if Mike Riley didn't mud jack that sidewalk out in front of his house in Corvallis and somebody tripped and fell and split their forehead open and got a nasty scar out of the deal, whatever the reason for the lawsuit, regardless of the fact that this one happens to be in regards to sexual assault, a decade and a half makes me question motivation.
And I think that's what most people fall into, is the motivation. Listen, you and I have been around a lot of coaches. I've never known a coach. I've known coaches who bend the rules. I know coaches who will take chances on questionable players because, A, they know they have talent, and I think they generally think they can change them if they get them in a good surrounding and culture, that their attitude will change. But I've never met a coach that fosters a culture of violence. I've never known one, ever, in my life to go after something like that. Have you?
Oh, absolutely not at all. I think most coaches are, you know, even the worst of coaches, and when I say worst, I'm talking not guys who are going out there putting out 2-10 teams on the field. I'm talking about coaches who are going out there and, well, like you said, they're fostering violence. I mean, they're trying to create a system of thuggery.
Maybe Miami back in the 80s, but that's about
it. You could probably make that argument for them, Oklahoma in the very late 80s. There, you know, occasionally programs have had a number of issues in that regard. Oregon State, Mike Riley.
Doesn't make sense.
I mean, this was something that, I mean, the guy's been on campus for 9 months, and this makes no sense whatsoever.
Of course, the Huskers are going to kick off the season on Saturday against BYU. This will be a game that Mike Riley is maybe a little distracted on, because
we're actually talking about the game.
We're actually going to go to the game. Of course, you'll want all the news you can get about the game. We want to thank the good friends at Husker Max for distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. If you want the most up-to-date, informative information on Big Red football and the University of Nebraska, it comes from Husker Max at huskermax.com. Now, everybody's going to be looking for something to do when they go to the game on Saturday. You're going to get there early. You're going to be tailgating. I'm going to tell you right now, I want you, and Rob's going to look for this. I'm going to look for it. And I want you to visit Kelly at the Weenie Wagon, better known at the Chicago Doghouse. It's going to be at 9th and P. The Weenie Wagon's going to be right there. You can get original Chicago-style hot dog, chips, all sorts of good stuff. You can't miss it. It's a nice big trailer. It says Chicago Dog on it, Doghouse on it. It's an original Chicago hot dog. Who doesn't love a Chicago hot dog? Rob, when you're at the game, I want you to stop by and say, Kelly, love the Doghouse.
I like hot dogs a lot.
I know. And, of course, if you can't visit the Weenie Wagon,
the more I can put on them, the better.
If you can't visit the Weenie Wagon on game day, which we want you to, because they're open before and after the game, you can also visit their store at Midtown Crossing in Omaha at 3157 Farnham. Again, that's in Midtown Crossing. They're open Monday through Saturday, 10:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., and on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
They have more than just hot dogs.
They do. They've got hamburgers, great fries, bratwurst, sausage. The Chicago Doghouse, a great supporter of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So, Huskers kick off the season against BYU. Win or lose, Rob? I'm going to get right to it. Win or lose?
I got nothing. I cannot wrap my head around this game to save my life. I have never gone into a season opener with more uncertainty in my own head than I have with this one.
And your head, I can see your head spinning right now.
I got nothing. I'd love to put I mean, the optimist in me says it's at home. I think Nebraska's going to pull it out. I think BYU has some question marks on defense. I'm worried about a guy like Taysom Hill. If he's truly as healthy as everybody says, the guy can run. He's got an okay arm. It is not a great arm. He's kind of got that efficient drop it to the guy in the flat, the dink and dime you down the field with the 5-10-yard passes. He's not going to go long ball on you. I mean, this is not BYU of old. So He's not a long ball guy. What he is, though, he's a guy who can make you miss. I got to double check some of the stats. I want to say running downs, whether it's due to a scramble or a designed run, I think he last year was averaging, prior to injury, he was averaging just a little over 7 yards a carry. I mean, that's insane for a quarterback.
Yeah, and what we're talking about
basically
here...
Basically, that's Eric Crouch numbers.
If you have a quarterback that is dangerous, that is lethal, that is a playmaker, he makes so many things happen, especially if he can run. And Nebraska's been burned how many times with a mobile quarterback? How many times? I know it's a different scheme.
I would say it's somewhere right around every time. Approximately every time they get burned by the dual threat mobile guys. Now, hey, here's the thing. It's a new scheme this year.
But does that change anything?
Well, it really can, and that's the other thing that makes me worried a little bit, is because of the fact that you have Mark Banker's defense. It's an attacking defense. They've talked a bunch about the fact that it's designed. You know what? You got your initial read, and you go. If that initial read's not right, which, I mean, two-thirds of the time, three-quarters of the time, that initial read is going to be right. And the few times it's not, little bit the linebackers, but mainly the safeties and corners are the guys who are going to be kind of sweeping up the mess if that initial read's not right. When you have these attacking defenses, these fly-to-the-ball defenses, that's where you have the potential to get burned by a guy like Hill.
Of course, Nebraska is the favorite in this game. I think the over-under is like 64.5. I think I would take the over on that. I really do. I think you're going to see some points being scored.
I think it's going to be a shootout.
Yeah, I think it could be one of those fun games to watch. Do you expect Nebraska – where do you expect Nebraska to struggle, either on defense or offense, if you were to pick one side, or will it be equally struggle, if they struggle at all?
I think if there's going to be some struggle, I think it's going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And the reason I say that is that the defensive coaches – other than maybe depth at linebacker, they have been very optimistic all throughout fall camp. And a lot of it has to do with that defensive line. When you look at Collins and Valentine up front, I think they're, you know, when the center of your line is solid, the defense on the whole is going to be solid. And you've got two NFL caliber guys in the middle there. I think they're happy with who they've got at linebacker. I think they're scared shitless with the depth they've got at linebacker. I think everybody is. One or two injuries at linebacker, and all of a sudden you're going to see Nathan Jerry being moved back up to be outside linebacker again. They just don't really have the numbers there right now. They don't have the experienced numbers. In a game like this where you've already got Rose Ivy out for the game, I mean, that's a guy who I shouldn't say would have, but potentially would have been carrying a black shirt.
Have we learned who not playing yet?
I know Rose Ivy's one of them, and I think that's, I got to be honest with you, that's the only one I've really paid attention to for no reason other than the fact he was the one potential starter.
Yeah.
So the other guys, it wasn't starters, it wasn't returning starters. He was the one guy that I think was potentially slated to be a starter, and because of that, that hurts, especially at a position you want depth at. If this does turn into a shootout, you're going to want guys rotating in there, getting breaks, getting their wind. And that hurts you not having a guy like him in there, even at least to provide depth.
What does Tommy Armstrong have to do on Saturday? What do you want to see from him?
Turn the ball over. This is a team that I think Nebraska can beat. You know, from a passing standpoint, I think he's, from the little bit I've seen of Taysom Hill, I think Tommy Armstrong, much better long ball. I mean, he's got a strong arm. He can chuck it downfield. So that's not a question mark. If he comes out and throws with even a little bit of a degree of accuracy, I think Nebraska will be fine. If Tommy can run efficiently, he doesn't have to carry him. They've got a slew of running backs. None of them are Amir Abdullah. But they've got a slew of guys, all of whom are at worst pretty good. I mean, I'll be interested to see how Newbie does shouldering the load. You've got Amani Cross, you got Adam Taylor. I mean, they've got some guys who I think can shoulder the load in terms of carrying the ball. Not having Pearsonell's really bad. It would have been great to have him because the guy's truly a game changer. On the flip side, you've got a potential game changer in Jamal coming back, and I think a guy like Turner can make some plays. We just haven't seen him for a year.
How long will it be before you make a good, positive assessment of what this team is? It's not going to be game one. Can't be game one. Or do you think you're going to be able to see a lot in game one?
I think you've really got to get through the non-conference schedule. And it's an up-and-down schedule because you've got two teams in BYU and Miami.
Yeah.
That on the surface, you'd sit there and go, wow, these guys are good teams. But BYU's got Hill coming back off of injury. They had this kind of patchwork offensive line last year, which it's not like Nebraska didn't. But I think they've got four guys coming back with eight games each of starting experience. And that's not bad. So I think BYU is going to live up to the hype on offense. Their defense is a question mark because they had no pass rush last year. And they weren't a great defense. And I think if Nebraska can hold on to the ball, they're going to be fine. And a lot of the reason I say that is because of Collins and Valentine on defense. But if Nebraska can hold on to the ball, I think they're going to be fine. The question that you ask, though, is that when you look at the non-conference schedule, on the surface, BYU looks like they ought to be good. Well, they got a lot of question marks, too. Miami looks like they ought to be good. Man, they lost basically their offensive line, their defensive line, and an NFL caliber running back. They got a great it's like BYU. Miami has a great quarterback coming back, and that's about it. Yeah. I mean, outside of that, Miami's a big question mark also. Do you make an assessment against South Alabama?
No, you can't make an assessment against South Alabama.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe for your backups, because you want to be playing your backups.
Yeah, you do. You really do. I mean, if Nebraska's playing starters
yes.
two-thirds of the way through the fourth quarter,
there's something wrong.
There's something wrong. There's your assessment on South Alabama. So it's you got these teams that on the surface look pretty good. Last year in Lincoln, when Nebraska just smoked Miami and Lincoln, I mean, just ran up and down the field on them, I came out of that game thinking, holy crap, I think Nebraska could really be something special. But after the near firing after the 2013 season, that loss to Iowa, after Nebraska beat Miami last year, I start thinking, Perlman's going to be pissed. Bo's going to be here for another 5 years.
Perlman's a disgrace, though. Oh, I can't say that because that will prevent me from getting any job.
Yeah, that PA job. You just lost it right
damn
there,
it.
Travis. So,
damn it.
Anyway, the non-conference schedule, in my opinion, it's got potential. It's got some awesome, interesting games with Miami and BYU. When was the last time you saw a non-conference schedule that you could even remotely be halfway excited about?
And this is one of them.
It is. I love seeing it.
Yes.
You've got a couple of interesting teams here. I like this. But those teams, I think, are poor teams to really get a good assessment from, just because those teams they've got some big question marks about them. I think you're going to need to kind of get into a little bit of the Big Ten grind. I think it's going to be mid-season before we're going to have half a feel on
them. Okay, you know, you mentioned the Big Ten. Besides Nebraska BYU, which I think is one of the marquee games in the conference this week, any other games you're looking forward to just to paying attention to? Ohio State, Virginia Tech would be a good one. I mean, you got Michigan, Utah on Thursday night, which is going to be a good game.
You got USC. Is it Arkansas State?
Well, you know what else?
They got a bad one they're starting with. The Alabama-Michigan one's going to be interesting.
Alabama-Wisconsin.
Alabama-Wisconsin, Utah-Michigan.
And do you know what else is a scary game? Is Iowa-Illinois State. I mean, Illinois State played for that Division Two or Division One to play national title. I know.
Dude, every time Iowa plays one of these lower-tier schools,
you don't know what's going to happen. Dude,
you do. They get their asses kicked.
Well, what happened, you know, and don't forget,
usually it's the Panthers of Northern Iowa.
Illinois State has Trey Roberson, who was a quarterback for Indiana in 2011.
Any relation to L. Roberson?
I don't know the answer to that.
That'd be something I would love. Dude, anybody who follows me on Twitter or follows Doc Talk Sports on Twitter, somebody tell me. That if Trey Roberson,
I should know that, but I don't,
because I remember when L. Roberson against Bo Pelini in 2003, L. Roberson, I believe, said what at that time was the all-time rushing record against a Nebraska defense. Now that's been eclipsed mostly by Wisconsin running backs, but. But yeah, I want to know, is Trey Roberson from Illinois State, is any relation to L. Roberson? The sad thing is probably his son.
I don't think it's his son.
Yeah, you don't know that.
It's not his son.
Okay, hey, I played with Christian Fourier, All-American tight end at Colorado.
It's not his son.
Christian's son has already out of college, played at UCLA, helped kick Nebraska's butt a couple times.
It's not his son.
And is now in the NFL. It could happen. It could be.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. If you want to hear more of this and see what he has to say on game day, you will want to follow him on Twitter at DocTalkSports. He's a very active guy on Twitter. Can you use that camera function? Maybe you can take some pictures and tweet pictures too.
I did last year. Usually it was pictures of the pulled pork sandwich, yes, with the jalapeno.
But this
slaw.
Year you're going to stop at the Weenie Wagon at 9th and P and visit Kelly Keegan at the Chicago Doghouse. That's what you're going to do. Just
that, I like to take pictures of delicious food.
And there is plenty of delicious food.
I'm thinking I'm getting a big Italian sausage this weekend at 9th and P.
Big thanks to the Benson Brewery and the Chicago Doghouse for their support of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. I want to thank HuskerMax.com for distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And, of course, our friend Dave Remington at the Remington Trophy, the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. The Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th at Rococo Theater, Lincoln, Nebraska. It is the premier event. You do not want to miss it. Huskers, BYU on Saturday. Dr. Rob and I will be back next week to talk all about the game and much, much more. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.